KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT News team.
That's right. It's time for KMXT's Talk of the Rock here on KMXT 100.1 FM. I'm your host, Davis, and I've got two guests in the studio joining me today. We're going to be talking about fish hatcheries, specifically our local ones here in Kodiak. But before we get too far into that, I'll let my guests introduce themselves. We'll start here on my left. Kyle, who are you and what do you do here?
Hi, everybody. I'm Kyle Williver. I'm fresh to the island, only been here about a year, but I'm the research and monitoring manager here at KRAA.
Great. And Tina.
And this is Tina Fairbanks. I'm the executive director of Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association. I've been permanently here in Kodiak since 2003 and have been the executive director of the association since 2014.
Awesome. And remind us, what does KRAA stand for? And I believe you're on 40 more than 40 years at this point, right?
More than 40 years. KRAA was formed in 1983 as Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association. Currently, we operate two Pacific salmon hatcheries, one at Katoy Bay on a Fognak Island and one here in town on the road system, Pillar Creek Hatchery. We also have, with Kyle, an active research and monitoring program. We have programs that provide commercial sport and subsistence opportunity throughout the Kodiak archipelago. And currently, of interest to a lot of folks here in Kodiak, we are working on initiating a rehabilitation project for Karlik Chinook, which is just in its beginning stages. But folks who follow Chinook here in town are probably pretty aware that the last 3 years at Karlik have been very dismal. And so we felt that it was time that we step in to take active measures to work on rehabilitation there.
We're going to come back to that because I know, yeah, that's definitely an important topic, talking about Chinook, king salmon, as stocks around the state are suffering. First, I just want to mention, I know a lot of folks were in attendance at the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting last week. This was the statewide meeting in Anchorage for finfish, and there were a few proposals in there that dealt with hatcheries. We're not going to recap all of that, but I would like to talk about one of them because it would have had a significant impact on KRAA, and that's Proposal 172. Which the board voted to take no action on, but ultimately that would have placed a moratorium on pink and chum hatchery production in the state. And I believe there are 28 hatcheries in the state, roughly speaking.
Pretty close.
Pretty close, okay. So obviously not just KRAA, but yeah, Tina, what are your thoughts on that proposal? And could you just give us a summary of how that would have impacted Kodiak hatcheries?
Well, after 8 years of fighting proposals like this one, some seeking to cut production, others looking to cap it, or in this case to provide a moratorium, Proposal 172 would have limited KRAA's ability to seek any new projects or production, and specifically with pinks and chums. And so while it would not change the production currently at Katoy Bay Hatchery, where we produce 215 million pink salmon eggs and 36 million chum salmon eggs annually, that proposal would not have changed that, but it would have altered KRAA's flexibility and our capacity to seek out any additional projects for our region. And so what is consistently at in question in relation to these proposals is the extent of the Board of Fisheries authority over hatchery programs. And so people who followed this recent Board of Fish meeting and the fact that the board took no action on Proposal 172, the board did request of the commissioner of ADF&G that he work with the aquaculture associations in each region on this topic and concept of a moratorium. And so while we don't have specific direction from the commissioner at this time, because it's only been a couple days, and he's actually here in Kodiak for the Board of Game meeting ongoing.
Yes.
But what we don't know yet is quite how that's going to look in our region, but we have some anticipation that we will do an examination of our programs and report back to the commissioner on the state of our programs, the extent of them, and then I believe that in Kodiak we will probably refer to what is called the Comprehensive Salmon Plan for Kodiak that was developed through the regional planning team. And so what a lot of people don't realize is that hatchery programs actually do have a public process in each region. So while the Board of Fish occurs regionally on a three-year cycle in each area, the regional planning teams in each region for the Aquaculture Association provide a planning process that engages the public and allows for public participation, typically on a twice annual basis. So in the spring and the fall, we have regional planning team meetings that are open to the public. They're publicly noticed, and people have an opportunity to weigh in on their desire for hatchery production, their concerns about hatchery production, or projects that they would like to see the Aquaculture Association pursue.
And is that spring meeting coming up for the next planning meeting?
It's April 13th, if anyone would like to join on
great.
That, because we'll be talking about this. And then what we'll also talk about is the King Salmon Project.
Great. So stay tuned for those details. But yeah, mark your calendars now, April 13th. And I appreciate that synopsis, Tina. I just want to overview then, too. You mentioned, you know, it looks like there will be some sort of evaluation, examination of your programs. Could you just remind folks, you know, what your programs do? And maybe, Kyle, you can jump into, since you handle research and monitoring. But, I mean, it's more than just you know, producing salmon and releasing them into commercial fisheries and such.
Okay. How about if I jump in on how our programs are reviewed?
Sure.
And Kyle can talk about our production.
Great.
KRAA's programs actually do have consistent review on an annual basis, and also with respect to the permits that we have. There's a hatchery permit, but then all of the activities of the hatchery that relate to egg take and production are permitted through fish transport permits that have a five-year renewal period. And each time that fish transport permit or FTP goes through a renewal cycle, it actually goes through review at various divisions and departments within the Department of Fish and Game. So genetics, pathology, commercial fishery, sport fishery, and you know, you even get subsistence perspective on those. So those are reviewed on a consistent basis through the permitting process with the Department of Fish and Game. And each year, each program submits an annual management plan, which is essentially their permit to operate each year. So their programs are detailed, and there's opportunity to look at the programs themselves for people to comment on the extent or the way that the programs are operated. So we have a high degree of review on an annual basis. We also have other permitting processes to which we are subject, such as hatchery effluent or any domestic wastewater that we produce. We conduct monitoring of those parameters and make sure that we remain current on all levels of reporting, whether it be to DEC or DNR or just our basic permits. And with that, I'll turn it over to Kyle.
Well, speaking to the production, well, it's just starting with Pillar Creek. They're relatively small by comparison to Katoy and all other hatcheries in general. But you could primarily put them out as a sport fish and sockeye producing facility. So if you're out on the Russian catching some fish, you likely could be catching say a hatchery boring fish. Mm. But most of their sockeye end up in a project that I actually help head at Spirit and Telluride Cove. You may be familiar with those if you've been on the island before, but it's a rather unique fishery where it's a terminal fishery and the fish are put into a barren lake. And the fish bypass these series of waterfalls. And that's what my crew does, is quantify them so we can get some good forecasts going for when they return. But why this is so unique is a lot of the opposition that we're feeling are bound around the straying and genetic integrity and the ocean carrying capacity, right? Well, sockeye don't necessarily stray all that much. And this being a terminal fishery, they don't actually spawn. So it is a very unique scenario that would be unfortunate if we were bound on that in any capacity, even though it's not directly pointing at sockeye. But that is a very unique fishery that we help to contribute to. And then, of course, there's katoi. 300 million eggs of pink go out, and they do all other species too, so chum, coho, everything. And they contribute immensely to the commercial fishery just in the pinks alone, which is huge. So
I'm going to follow up on commercial here in a moment, but first I want to go back to the permitting. So all of this, all of the permitting process is overseen by the state, it sounds like.
Correct.
Okay. And you mentioned that in that fish transport permit, that's a review process that you said is roughly 5 years.
Yeah.
And that also goes through the state? Is that a state process?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So when the aquaculture associations were formed in the 1970s, the statutes that surround the aquaculture association place that capacity for permitting and review firmly within the commissioner's authority at the Department of Fish and Game. And so there is an extensive process for permitting any new facility. You know, there's a level of review. And then once permitted, the ability to develop a brood stock, some of this, the vagueness and the questions about Board of Fish authority over hatcheries come from our perspective on when an aquaculture association or a hatchery would require any kind of allocation from the Board of Fish. And in this instance, if we had a new facility we were looking to permit, what we might require is an allocation. If it was a chum hatchery, we would want to go into a wild stock chum system in order to take eggs. And so we might seek an allocation from the Board of Fisheries so that they could direct the Department of Fish and Game to manage a fishery to put additional fish into a system for KRAA in order to develop a broodstock. And so that is when an allocation might be necessary for a hatchery program. But because the statute itself does not indicate that allocation or the ability for the board to weigh in this area is for wild stocks, there is ambiguity in that statute. So that has been what has been under contention for the years, most recently, where we have had a lot of hatchery proposals at the Board of Fish. And so one of these days, it could be that the Board of Fish decides to take action on one of these proposals. We've felt that the proposals that have been before the board have not been, we have felt that they've been fairly arbitrary and not well-grounded in science. And we feel that hard science with empirical data demonstrates across various sectors, whether it's oceanography or study of ocean ecology, we feel that hard data and hard science goes a long way to answer questions about productivity. And then in addition, the hatchery operators, whether, you know, from Southeast to South Central and Kodiak, approached the Department of Fish and Game about 15 years ago now about some of the questions that had arisen about hatchery production in Alaska in terms of straying and relative reproductive success. And we thought that it was necessary at the time to initiate a program exploring some of those questions. And so the Alaska Hatchery Research Project was formed, which is decision-making for that body or for that research project goes through an independent science panel. And the aquaculture associations have contributed millions of dollars along with processors and a lot of in-kind from the Department of Fish and Game to look specifically at some of those questions. And though the conclusions and any policy guidance from that massive project and undertaking for the last 12 years plus have not been finalized or as yet communicated to the public in terms of what conclusions can be drawn and what policy decisions could come from that. We have a high degree of confidence that information, as well as ongoing work that we will likely continue to support, goes a long way to vindicate hatchery programs and the way that they were created by very visionary people in the Department of Fish and Game and in the legislature back in the 70s.
So let's talk a little bit about the science then. So Kyle, as research and monitoring, you kind of alluded to, you know, with Spirit and Lake Project and those sockeye, that's a terminal fishery. It's a unique one. So what can you determine? What do you know about some of these, you know, hatchery fish coming out of Pillar or Katoy or Spiritin, even if you want to use that as an example?
We can talk about it in general. There sounds like there's a lot of science going on that is long overdue. And even in KRA, we were grant funded in doing a otolith, pink otolith recovery that we're undergoing analysis right now from thousands and thousands of pink salmon that we've got here on the road system. So it's not that we are stepping back and allowing others to do it, but we're taking a firsthand look at it ourselves as well and contributing to that data that will ultimately help guide some of these decisions. But when you step back again yet and you looked at all of the factors that are affecting wild stocks and hatchery fish, it's there's a lot more going on besides a hatchery fish just competing with the wild fish. Pinks do better in warmer water, where every other species seems to struggle a little more. So in our department, we look a lot at temperatures, and especially freshwater temperatures. So that, and we'll get into that, but there's just offhand, there's correlating data to freshwater temperatures and declines in even the Karlik. So by taking advantage of the hatchery advantage, we'll call it, in the freshwater, being able to control that, we're able to do things that nature couldn't. And we want to do that in a responsible manner. So making sure that we follow through with all of these studies is so important. But just in the fact that Telrod is a terminal fishery, there's no genetic issues because we're taking only wild stock from the allocations that Tina mentioned before, from Sultry, actually. That interaction is minimal, and it only really contributes to the fishermen and the intercept fisheries that go on with that special harvest area.
What about in situations like this past fall in September, there was a fuel spill from a boat there right outside Katoy Hatchery in Katoy Bay. Did you see any impact on your hatchery operations and the fish coming out of there?
Well, this is my opportunity to really give a shout out to the crew at Katoy Bay Hatchery. There has, ever since the 1989 oil spill, there have been a few vans full of oil boom at the hatchery facility, and our staff doesn't train on it. For a lot of years, there were folks that came out and did training exercises to boom off Katoy Bay and Little Katoy Estuary. But when we saw that the fuel from that accident was headed toward the hatchery, our crew actually deployed three layers of boom in front of the facility, which protected our broodstock. The fishery did shut down temporarily, but since the spill was diesel and dissipated with some rapidity, you know, the closure was relatively minimal. The impacts to the facility were none due to the efforts of our hatchery crew. And we were able to, you know, the fuel spill occurred, I think, on Monday. And by Saturday, the fishery was back open. So people with a lot more experience with fuel spills of that nature can speak to that. In much more scientific and knowledgeable terms, but diesel being relatively volatile, it did disperse rapidly. It looked scary, but when it came right down to it, we were able to keep it from impacting our broodstock or the hatchery in general. We probably wound up with a little more broodstock than we would have taken otherwise, just due to the closure. But fortunately, because it had been open right around the hatchery prior to that, there wasn't a big buildup of fish at the time of the fuel spill. And by the time it was opened back up, the bulk of those fish had been were still able to be intercepted. So the threat was there. It was real. And the crew at the hatchery just did everything that they could. Also, shout out to all of the crews and fishermen that were on site when the fishery did reopen, that helped our maintenance folks pull in the boom so that the fishery could be conducted in the normal areas when it did reopen, and which allowed our hatchery crew to continue with the egg take operations that they do during that. That's the normal time frame for pink salmon egg take. So the crew was very much dedicated to securing production for 2 years from now. So that'll be 2027 production or returns. And the lonely maintenance crew had a lot of boom to bring in, and there were a lot of folks on the scene and really just pulled together and helped our crew bring in that boom so that we could get everybody fishing, and that's what we're here for.
Yeah, great stuff. And that kind of segues a little bit into cost recovery fisheries. So, I mean, for commercial fishermen in the Department of Fish and Game, I know they work well with you and the hatchery fish that you provide. Can you kind of talk about what a cost recovery fishery is and how that helps your operations and keep you going?
Sure. Aquaculture associations are nonprofits in the state of Alaska, and we derive income through two basic means. The first is a salmon enhancement tax, which in Kodiak is a 2% tax that is levied on the ex vessel value of all salmon deliveries in Kodiak, which is our region, Area K. And so the fishermen of Kodiak, all the commercial salmon permit holders, pay that 2% back to the association. And that helps cover some of our basic operations. And then the other means by which we can derive income is through cost recovery fisheries. As you indicated, KRAA has two locations where we conduct cost recovery, a smaller sockeye cost recovery at Tailrod Cove, which Kyle has mentioned. That's spirit and lake stocking and sockeye returns, and then adult pink salmon returns to Katoy Bay Hatchery. And so each year we put out a licensing opportunity for exclusive access to the Katoy Bay Special Harvest Area, where KRAA is allowed to license returning adult salmon for sale. So we have an agreement with a processor each year. It goes out to bid. The processors competitively submit a price for the offering that KRAA puts out, and then the proceeds of the harvest that returns to the hatchery in the special harvest area come to KRAA. So we work with the department, and typically that coincides with broodstock collection at Katoy Bay Hatchery. So we're working to collect broodstock through the fishery at the same time we're doing cost recovery. And when everything works perfectly, we're also still able to offer some fishery around the hatchery at the same time, depending on the size of the return and its timing and those kinds of things. But KRAA has always worked very hard to maximize the contribution we make to the fisheries of Kodiak, whether that be commercial fisheries, sport fisheries, as those programs that are at Pillar Creek Hatchery, or subsistence fisheries, like we work with the villages of Yuzinki, Port Lions, and then there's also subsistence opportunity on some of the other fish that we release around the Kodiak archipelago.
Great. So we're already running out of time. I knew it was going to go fast. So I just want to kind of preview what you're working on now for this summer. Kyle, maybe you could start, and then Tina will wrap with you. But yeah, what is coming up? What is KRAA doing right now in preparation for the summer season?
Well, it's pretty status quo in my department. We've got our seasonals hired, and we are going to go out in May 1st to start setting up the smolt enumeration on Spiriton Lake. And here, as we mentioned, the RPT is coming up. That is a big one for us with our king salmon proposal to see if we get the green light to start working out there and do some rehab work. That will inevitably make quite a big shakeup. But as it is now, it's very much status quo, and forecasts are finished for our cost recoveries, and we're ready and set.
Okay. Yeah, Tina?
Well, as Kyle mentioned, probably one of the biggest changes for KRAA will be whether or not we initiate this Chinook rehabilitation project. There's a lot that's, the Department of Fish and Game and, the aquaculture associations have not actively done a lot of rehabilitation using hatchery measures in a long, long time. And so we have a lot more knowledge of genetics and hatchery techniques to help guide us, but putting that back together is a big undertaking. So it's a collaborative project. We have some really incredible partners in the people that we work with, particularly at Koniag, and also with the folks that we work with continually through our cooperative agreement, and just because we're all members of this community, the folks at Fish and Game. So, also under Kyle's purview is our limnology program. A lot of people don't realize that we conduct water quality monitoring throughout the archipelago, looking at the rearing capacity of lakes and how much food's available. That's another thing that we do cooperatively with the Department of Fish and Game. And just in terms of overall forecasts and projections, once again, we're looking to make sure that we make a contribution to our community, put fish on people's plates and in their nets.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's unfortunately all the time we have, but I want to make sure folks have the information they need to get in touch with you. So you mentioned there's an April 13th meeting coming up. How can folks attend or contribute to that conversation?
Folks could email us at kraa@kraa.org. That's an easy one. You can call us at our KRAA offices at 907-486-6555. And you can find us on the web at kraa.org.
Perfect. All right. And stay tuned for more details about that April 13th planning meeting. Thank you to Tina and Kyle for joining me today on Talk of the Rock. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All righty. And Terry, we'll throw it back to the studio with you. You're listening to KMXT.